we're going to have a powerful story as we're going to be speaking with Oluwa Kemi. Yes, Oluwa Kemi Sheba. And she's all the way in Africa. But it doesn't matter where you are, where you're from. It doesn't matter your race, your ethnicity. You all have stories that can become very inspirational to those who might be going through similar experiences. And so today, I am in the company of Oluwa Kemi Sheba from Africa, who's going to share her story with us. And I sincerely hope that you will be inspired, motivated, and engaged. Oluwa Kemi Sheba, welcome.
Thank you, Charlene, for having me. And to the listeners and everyone out there, it's a pleasure being on the show. And I hope that after today's show, my experience will impact one or two people out there and just give somebody hope. Thank you once again, Sherlyn.
Welcome. And so, you know, with everything, we start at the beginning. And so first, I want to get your permission to shorten your name and just to refer to you as Kemi. Would that be okay?
Very well.
All right. And so we start everything at the beginning, Kemi. And so I want you to share with us, you know, a little bit about your life, you know, during your youthful days back in your country, how you grew up, as much of it that you can remember. Tell us about you, how you grew up. What was life like for you?
Okay. I had a really, should I say, okay childhood after the events that happened to me. Growing up, the series of events that happened in my home, but it didn't really affect me as a child that way. After I had gotten through the major mishap, I would like to call it a mishap, but I was born into a family of majorly girls, my mom, my dad, and I had a clean, bright education growing up. And basically, there's nothing that was so untoward about my childhood. It was pretty pleasant, apart from that major incident that almost went south for me. That's basically it.
Sure, it sounds very short. At what stage in your life, at what age did this major incident happen?
Oh, well, this is a very touchy one. This is way back then. We're talking almost decades and decades ago. I was 4 years old when this, I would like to call it a life-altering incident happened. And it kind of, if I may use the word rearrange, it kind of rearranged my life and just sets the tone for how I grew up and the things that made me become who I am today, both spiritually, physically, academically, and in all first, that major incident was just, I won't call it a breaking point, but it was a point in my life that just, it was just through the help of God, I didn't turn my life upside down. I would just like to put it that way.
So that it happened when you were 4 years old. So practically you had to live your life-altering situation, because that's how you call it. And we're going to talk about it, listeners, but we just want to get, you know, an understanding of Kemi's childhood life. And, you know, you're practically saying that you had to live your altered life somewhat since 4 years to today's date.
Exactly. The image I remember of between 0 to 4, if I can say I remember, is basically one or two pictures that I see. And when I see them, I still saw them a bit, maybe last week or 2 weeks ago. And it kind of made my eyes water, because at times I try to make a connection between then and all these years I have grown up and I can't seem to piece it together, but in as much here I am today, between 4 and now.
All right, could you share with us, you know, what was the major incident, as much as you can share, so we can understand what really altered your life, though it might be positive now, because we want persons to understand that, you know, out of every challenge, you can find that positive ground to stand on. So what was this major incident that happened to you at 4 years old that changed your life forever?
Oh, I need to catch my breath, but thank you, Shirley. It was on the 21st of December, 1981, mm-hmm. myself and the members of my family were traveling down to one of the eastern states in Nigeria, and an accident occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And when that accident occurred, as a child, I was standing in the vehicle that I was. Mm-hmm. I was holding on. My uncle was driving. My aunt was sitting in front. I was actually in front of my aunt before she felt comfortable, you know, as a little girl, you know, children and squirming around and all that.
Mm-hmm.
As a little girl, she didn't control me in front anymore and mm-hmm. was fully tried to put me at the back. But even when she did that while the car was still in motion, I was very, very active as a child. I still refused to sit down. And I held on to my aunt's headrest in front, my uncle's headrest, and boom, it happened. I don't know whether it was speed. I do not know whether it was the road, but the tire of the car burst. And I was still standing. Once that happened, the car somersaulted like thrice, and I was flung as a little child with, you know how frail a child can be. I was just a little, about 6 days on top of 4 years. My fourth birthday was on the 15th of December, 6 days after. I was flung against the windscreen from where I was standing while some assaulted, and I was flung against the windscreen, and that was it. I had cuts and lacerations all over my body, and all of, especially on my face. From what I was told and the little I remember, there was blood everywhere. My younger sister was flung out of the car too, but thankfully nothing happened to her. She was found in a nearby bush crying. She was one then. She was found in a nearby bush crying, and the occupants of the car were 7, were rushed down to University of Benin Teaching Hospital. When we got there, there were no beds. It was 4 days to Christmas, so many casualties were on the floor. Well, thankfully, my mom's sister that was in the car was conscious. I wasn't conscious as when all this has happened because of the huge impact I had taken. She could talk and she just kept on screaming. My brother, because my mom's twin brother, that's my uncle, is a medical doctor. She just kept on screaming, "My brother is a doctor. Check his pockets. His ID card is in there." They checked and they saw his ID card. And that was it. They made, I don't know how it happened, but they made space for us. They found beds for us some way, somehow. For the first 3 days after that incident, I couldn't speak. I didn't open my eyes. There was no movement, there was no motion, there was nothing. Both my parents didn't travel with us. They had to call them that this had happened along the way, and they they rushed down as soon as they could. My dad told me from the snippets I could remember, and also my dad told me that it was when he came and he touched me that I could open my eyes and look at him. Although my dad said he had a premonition that something was going to happen, and he had entered into some fasting and prayer a few days before we traveled.
Wow.
And that, and he says that he believes that it was just that power that saved me. My dad is late now, but he was a spiritual man, and he had the gift of discernment and premonition. So he just, once he got that revelation, he just entered into prayer. And I want to believe that it was that supernatural connection that he had that had eventually saved my life. I was on that bed taking drips. When I look at my arm, I still have some drip marks on my arm because we're looking for where to go all over my body. And it was just so heavy for both of my parents. My mother, I can't remember what it was that was supposed to be done to me, but my mother stood her ground. That whatever was going to become of me, that it should let me be. And she would take me the way I turned out to be. The prognosis was bad. They said there was fluid in my brain. That the fluid tilted to the particular corner of my brain, that I was going to become a retard. I was going to become a vegetable that would not be useful to myself, my family, or the society at large. But my mother stood her ground and said, no. Whatever this is, she would see it to the end. And that was it. And day after day, I spent a while in the hospital, but day after day, things became better in quotes, because as long as I didn't die, I would say things became better. And here I am today.
To God be the glory. Yes, to God be the glory. You did say that, you know, when you got to the hospital on the day, you know, you were told, your family were told that there were no space. But because your uncle was a doctor and had his ID on his person, that helped to save your lives.
Exactly. I wonder what would have happened if he did not have his ID card on him. Mm-hmm, I do not even want to imagine. Mm-hmm, because we hear such stories.
Mm-hmm,
it's happening. That incident is 40 years this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still happening.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't.
Then you said that, you know, the prognosis was that you would have become a vegetable, you know, retired. You would not have any use for self nor anybody else. But your mom stood her ground and said, well, then she's going to be standing by your side, you know, comes what may. And today you're here, you know, very much here. You're not just alive, you're not just talking, but you're a woman of power. You're motivating and inspiring quite a number of persons, you know. Kimmy, now that you have gone through days at the hospital, you have been discharged. I want you to tell us a little bit of how you overcame the trials, because now you're going into adulthood, teenager, adulthood. How did you overcame the trials and now become what I want to call you, an ambassador of change?
Thank you, darling. I need to confess this. It wasn't easy. From that point on, I had from 0 to 4, like I said, my childhood between 0 to 4 was a bit uneventful, but after my accident, like I said, my life altered. So from then on, when we got back and I had to grow into a young woman, primary, secondary, university, the journey was tough. You know how kids can be, you know how some insensitive adults can be, you know how yes. people can on your self-esteem. I won't lie, I had, for a long time, I had self-esteem issues up to the point that I entered the university. It was one person that I would want to say like my guardian angel. He didn't even know up till a few years ago that he was the person that God used to bring me up and out of that deep heat, I would like to call it, at that time. Primary school, going to school every day was hellish. You know how kids can be. Look at her mouth. Look at her eyes. She's looking there to throw things at me to see the direction in which my eyes would roll. They would say something that would warrant everybody to laugh. And when I laughed, I became a laughing stock, so to speak. I went through all of primary school like that. Secondary school, it was the same thing. Going to school every day was hard because the ridicule was a bit too much for me. I broke down at some points. I had some psychological breakdown at some points. When I pieced it together, as I grew older, I picked that it was psychological breakdowns. But you know, as a younger child, I didn't know what it was. I would cry sometimes that I didn't want to go to school. I would get to school and I would just be in my shell because I didn't want to open my mouth to speak, because opening my mouth to speak was going to elicit bouts of laughter from the other kids. But academically, I did well. I remember my Jesses 1, we had this thing that we used to, that the government used to do back then. They called it gifted children. In the whole arm of Jesses 1, I think we were over 200 children then, or call us children. And I was between number 1 to 15 out of 200 children. We went for competitions, we won prizes. But that didn't stop me from being laughed at, but I did well academically. And when I look at my secondary school, one of the things that I prided myself on as an achievement for secondary school was when we did our high school exams, I had... that was one of the selling points for me that made me think that, yes, there was something about me. When we did our WAEC, like we call it in Nigeria, I had A1 in literature. And it was a big deal for me because I felt that I had, at least for the first time in my life, I had won something. Other people had... people to look at them, you know, when we're growing up young ladies and growing into adulthood, you know, the teenage guy, girl thing. And I didn't have people look my way. I really felt ugly.
And you are. Yeah.
I felt really ugly. I felt unloved. Mm-hmm. I was thinking at the back of my mind that who was ever going to love me? Who would ever want to be seen with someone like me? It ate deep into me. I did have friends, but for me, it wasn't genuine. I felt it wasn't genuine. But some
Why
of
did
them.
you why did you feel why did you feel your friends weren't genuine? What made you feel that way?
Because a lot of times, you know how children could be. I could still hear gist behind that. This person said this, that person said that. That person laughed at me and said, what good could come out of me? You know, they'll go to, we used to have something back then that they called the Literary and Debating Society. They would go there, people would talk, people would interact, we'll have boys coming. I went to a girls only secondary school. Students from other schools will come in, boys only secondary schools, mixed schools. And for some of those things, a lot of those things, people were paired up. They had boys they used to talk to. But when those events were happening, you can imagine where I always was, in a corner, all by myself. No one walked up to me and said, hello, what's your name? I'd like to meet you. My name is, you know, what every girl dreamed of when she was a younger child. I was just there. I have, it was later I started realizing that I have a very good, my best friend now, we met in secondary school, just as one. I can say that, about two or three of them before the others fell by the wayside. It's just that one person that we're together now since 1989, and we're still very good friends now, so we understand each other so much. 32 years of friendship. She
Wow.
understands me. Yes, 32 years of friendship, my best friend. She understands me, I understand her, and that was the only person I could say that we connected at that point. All through my university days, when I write about my stories and secondary school of heart, when I wanted to enter the university, I know what I wrote in my jam. I know the schools I picked, but I was just like, can you imagine picking a school and praying that the school will not come through?
Crazy.
I picked one of the most glamorous schools in Nigeria. And the year we went to collect our results, my heart was just beating. I was like, may this not come true, may this not come true, may this not come true. But when I got my admission, it did come true.
Wow.
It did come true. Home. And I told my mom I wasn't going to that school. At that point in time in Nigeria, it was one of the most, it still is one of the most prestigious schools in Nigeria, the University of Lagos. And I was like, no, I wasn't going. I know what I went through in secondary school. So for me to go to that kind of school and continue the ridicule, it wasn't going to happen. I did everything to get a change of course and a change of institution, rather. But I guess God didn't want it to work out. I wanted to go somewhere far away, somewhere obscure, that I felt people know me. People won't ridicule me. People won't want
Right.
to make fun of me when they see me, at least in a world of my own. But my mom said no. My dad said no. That you know what happens to you, we cannot allow you out of our sights. It was hard. I'm glad I listened to them, and I thought long and hard about it. And I went to that school, and that was where I had that life transforming events that turned me to the person I am today.
So you said that that school, the University of Lagos in Nigeria, that's a
Yes,
school.
please. Yes.
Right. Kudos to the University of Lagos. I know some persons from that university will be listening, so big up to you. Yes. Right. So you went to that university, and you said it was when you were at that university you felt a little bit more comfortable because that is when your life changed. That is when you started becoming Oluwakemi, and that is when you felt some semblance of acceptance, right?
Exactly. With an encounter with one of my mentors then in church, after I'd entered the University of Lagos, he made me see that there was a purpose for me going through that school. Let me bring it to the genesis of that change when I was in that school, when I had to rewrite my story while I was in that school. I remember the first time, the first semester, and towards the end of the second semester, I would enter the classroom. I was a lone ranger. My inferiority complex was, if there was anything like 0.0 minus 0.001, that was what my inferiority complex level was like. Because I felt that I couldn't compete with anybody. I couldn't relate. They wouldn't see me as a human being. Somebody actually told me when he started talking to me later, when I had stood my ground and said, "This is me. If you like me for me, you stay with me. If you do not like me, you can take a walk." The person actually told me that he actually thought when we started school that I was a retard.
Wow.
And that's wow. And it hurt me big time. So if he saw me in that light, I wonder how many other people saw me in that light as well. Mm-hmm. From first semester to end of second semester, year one, I would enter the classroom from the back. I never entered the lecture rooms from the front. I would always enter the classroom from the back, sit at the back by myself, take my notes. And once the lecturer said this last word, and I took my notes, and I got one thing I had with me was up to the lecturer's final full stop, I would get it. Mm-hmm. I was that fast. Mm-hmm. When I get the final full stop, mm-hmm. before they pack their books, I am out and nobody sees me.
Wow.
Nobody sees me.
You were practically hiding.
Exactly. I was hiding.
All right. I want to ask you this though. What was most important? What was most important for you in life back then, and how did you keep yourself whole?
Yes, that brings me to how I kept myself whole. It was that encounter with my mentor then. He was a mentor in church, actually. Second semester, we were on holidays, and we went for a church program. And some of the kids in church, they made fun of me as usual. And as usual, like since my early childhood days, tears were my companion. The tears started again while I was in church for that program. And he saw me sitting in the corner all by myself again. And he called me and he was like, "What is wrong with you?" And as soon as I opened my mouth, it was with tears and a quivering voice. And he just told me, "Young lady, relax and talk to me. I want to listen to you." And I would like to say something at this point. Every person needs someone they can talk to, someone they can connect with, someone they can draw strength from. I drew strength from him that day. He didn't know this until a very long time later. Mm-hmm. He told me to sit down. And the first question he asked me was, "When you look at yourself in the mirror, what do you see?
What do you see? What do you see?"
Mm-hmm. And man, he released another torrent of tears. And he was like, "I'm so ugly. I feel like God should just kill me. I want to die. What am I doing in this world? I wonder why my mom didn't allow me to go. She should have allowed me to go when this. And he had to take a decisive step at that point. He just shouted me down. Shut up and listen to me. Still sniffling, I kept quiet. And he was like, I guess it was God's wisdom speaking through him that day. He was like, when you get home, go into your closet, kneel down and ask God for forgiveness. He was like, let me tell you what I see. He now said, you know you're tall, right? I said, yes, actually I'm tall for a woman. I think I'm 5'8 or 5'9. He said, do you know how many women would die to have your height? I stopped and looked at him. He said, do you know you have a very beautiful figure? Then I wanted to agree with him, but that place inside of me could not receive any compliment. I shook my head that no, telling him with the shake of my head that he was lying. He was like, you have a very good figure that people would love to have. He said, how many things had he told me now? I said, 2. He said, did you know that if you come into a room, the way you speak and the way you carry yourself, it commands a presence and it exudes confidence. I actually paused and looked at him. At that point, I wiped my eyes. And in my head, I was like, it looks as if maybe, just maybe, this guy is making sense. And he spoke more to me. That academically, you're sound. I've heard you talk. I've read some of your writings. You write poems. You write stories. I started when I was younger, but I never took it seriously until now. You have all this going for you. You just need to come out of your shell. You need to put more force and more life into who you are. All those years ago that you didn't die, God had a purpose for saving your life. God had a reason for you not going that day on that road. God had a reason that it didn't end on that road. That some people didn't go through half of that accident and they didn't make it. You had fluid in your brain. But here you are. One of the brightest young women I've met in my life. And did you know, I don't know how that happened, but that moved something in me that day all those years ago. And that was the turning point for me, Charlene. That was it. That was it. He connected with me somehow, and everything he was telling me connected with me that day. Nobody had ever pushed my values to me. I couldn't see that I had values by myself. It took that man speaking to me that day to draw out the values for me from within. And I thank God he made me see it. You know what I did from that day, Shirley? What I did, I became a new person. People were shocked at my transformation from first semester, year 2.
Not to disconnect you, but if you can just listen to what you're saying. one of the persons who were fighting against you, Kimi, was you. And you see, once you had that person who placed you in front of the mirror, asked you the pertinent questions, pulled you out of your shell, once you stopped fighting against yourself, you realized your potential. Would you agree?
Exactly, Sherlyn. Exactly. Everybody has potential in them. It just needs a little bit of digging. And I bless God that he used that mentor at that time to dig deep for me. And I met him halfway. And that was just the turning point for me. And rightly, like you said, I was my own enemy. I was the one fighting myself because I did not see any good in myself. I was always beating myself up. But there was a lot of gold in me. Let me put it that way. There was a lot of gold in me that I nobody could harness for me. I had to dig and look for it by myself. But thank God for his help. I eventually found the gold. First semester, year two, from then on, I took deliberate actions. I'm always talking about actions. I'm always talking about steps. And just like you said, it starts and it ends with you. It's what you call yourself that other people will call you. It's how you push yourself forward that other people will push you forward. Nobody can carry you for you. Nobody except you. If you're waiting for anybody to do that, sorry, ma'am, sorry, sirs, nobody will do that for you. What I did, I rebranded myself. I became a new me. I went to the market. I started it from the physical. My old clothes, because I felt I wasn't anything. I used to wear ill-fitting clothes. I just didn't take care of myself. I did not bother. But when he had dug deep and helped me dig out my potentials, I started caring about myself. I started caring about the way I looked. Because like one of my good people will say, your vibe, it attracts your tribe. It's what you push out that people will give back to you. I just rebranded myself, went to the market, got new clothes, got new shoes, got a lot of things outwardly. After working on myself inwardly, that was it. And by the time we resumed school, the next semester, Sherlyn, I was a whole new me. The faculty noticed.
Wow.
Close by faculty. And there was now buzz. And you know what the buzz was, Sherlyn? What is even wrong with this girl, sis? Who does she think she is? Because I exuded so much confidence at that point. I had seen it and had taken it. And it was now dwelling in me. Now I had more male friends than female friends. Because of the confidence I started exuding, people wanted to be around me. People wanted to hear what I had to say. People wanted to associate with me. You know, earlier I had told you that I was that articulate with notes and all that. My notes, people were dragging for my notes in class, making photocopies of my notes in class. Because they knew that whatever the lecturer said, I would get almost everything. I became a brand new me, a totally brand new me. I'm not saying I didn't have other experiences. There was a particular experience I had, and in one of my stories, I wrote it. That was before my transformation. I was coming to school one day. One of my classmates was on the line. We're waiting for a couple shuttle. I just want to address here that as human beings, we need to be sensitive to other people's plight and not speak anyhow, because you never might, you never can tell what the other person is going through. Then, before I became the brand new me, I always used to walk looking down. I never lifted up my face. I used to bump into people because I was not, I always didn't used to lift up my head because I didn't have that confidence, confidence at that time. I was walking down the line to get a on the campus shuttle line, and I heard my name. That was when I looked up. It was a classmate. She just pulled me into the line in front of her and said, I should, this is in one of my stories on LinkedIn, that I should be in front of her. I argued, I'm like, I do not want to jump here. She's like, come into the line. It's not buzzer and all that. And from behind, the next thing I heard in my mother tongue, I'm sure that lady knew that I was of the same ethnic extract as she was, she would have been more sensitive. She said, who allowed that girl with the bent mouth that her eye is paining her to enter the line? Sherlyn, I almost died. I cried all the way to school. People rose up. People stood and fought my cause that day, but the damage had been done. I had to go back to this because I just wanted to make people aware that your words need to be seasoned with salt. People are going through things. If you do not walk a mile in their knickers, you won't know what they're going through. Imagine if after that incident, maybe had become so depressed or had gone to commit suicide. So we need to actually be careful. Back to after my transformation, I became a whole new me. I had more friends. I became more vibrant. I became more lively. I could answer questions in class. I could speak with boldness. I could speak with confidence. And I had such a projection that people were now asking, like I said, what is wrong with her? Who does she think she is? Because I had found myself, Sherlyn. We need to find ourselves. If you don't find yourself, nobody will find yourself for you. I found myself. And that was the beginning of my transformation, Sherlyn.
That was important for the transformation to be realized. You. We continue to tell people that, listen, the biggest stumbling block you will ever face is yourself. Because if you think it, if you believe it, then so is it. You have to remain hopeful. You have to remain persistent, you know, when it comes to you. Many of us are hard on ourselves and we allow people's perception of us to be our reality. So for you, Kimi, you removed the biggest stumbling blocks ever, because there and then it didn't stop people from saying things. It didn't stop people from looking at you funnily. But what it stopped was you from saying the very same things and looking at yourself the very same way others were looking at you. And so when you realize your potential, when you realize that you are a beautiful, beautiful woman, no one was able to put you down any further. Know that you have jumped the hurdle. Know that you have transformed. Know that you have rebranded yourself. How now do you stay motivated?
Okay, Sherlyn. The greatest motivation for me is God. That's the greatest motivation for me at this moment. And after then, the will to make a positive impact. For me, the definition of success is the value you add to the person or persons within your environment. If you don't add value, you're nothing. It's not about the money you have. It's not about the wealth. It's not about anything you have.
Mm-hmm.
How do you attract people around you? That's where I'm at the moment. At this point, that singular incident I described that the last time when the lady spoke and said demeaning things to me, one of the things I picked up then was what made me go into the career that I do today. One of the things I picked up then that I encountered that I vowed to always use as a yardstick and as a measure for myself was empathy. Put yourself in other people's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Learn to listen to other people. Attend to other people like it was you that was in their shoes. Excuse me. And that was what motivated me to be a customer service professional. I am a customer service professional. I love making people happy. I love giving excellent service and allowing seamless service delivery. A customer satisfaction is my satisfaction. If the customer is not satisfied, I am not satisfied.
Right.
I'm not satisfied. The customer for any business, individually or in any kind of business, is king. If you do not treat your customers right, they walk out the door. And one of my first slogans in my customer over the years as a customer service person is, your customer, a happy customer, is a walking advert. One word from a satisfied customer is better than you going to any advertising agency. They will so sell you.
Exactly.
That's where I am at my career. I do customer service training as well. And on the line, I'm also an inspirational and motivational speaker as well. At this point in time.
Also, you're also on LinkedIn. Could you share your LinkedIn account with listeners?
Okay. On LinkedIn, you can find me as Oluwakemi Shiba. ICSN, because I'm a member of the Institute of Customer Service of Nigeria, Oluwakemi Shiba, my name, ICSN, mm-hmm. And you're on my list, and you can read my stories, my customer service. I'm a customer service storyteller. I use my to tell what customer service really is and what poor service is so that you know the difference.
Kimi, for persons who has gone through similar situation, it might not be an accident that caused their face to look different. It might not be, you know, it could be something completely different, but it enables similar treatment, similar reaction from persons who just don't understand your pain and choose to be mean instead of being kind. For those persons, what is your advice? How would you advise them to stay grounded, to be happy, and to know that they need to be strong in order to come out of that mental state of mind?
Thank you, Charlene. The most important thing that I learned along my journey is it starts and ends with you. Only you. Nobody has the right to your happiness. Nobody has the right to your happiness. It's what you allow people, it's how you allow people view you and see you. That's how they'll take you. If you hold your head high, no matter what it is, mine was an accident. There's so many other kind of hard knocks in life. I call those hard knocks coconuts. I wrote something about it a few days ago. For me, my coconut wasn't my accident.
Oh, it's when life throws you coconut, what do you make?
Exactly, Charlene.
I saw it.
Exactly. That's it. What did you make of it? For me, I picked up my coconut. I pulled off the shell. I broke it, picked up some pieces of coconut, ate some, and used some to do something else. Basically, I'm trying to say that whatever life throws at you, academically, financially, spiritually, career-wise, your family, some families are going through a lot of hardship. Whatever life decides to throw at you, breathe. Take a step back. Leave the moment. If you need to get away from it all, get away from it all for a bit. But not run away. Get away from it all for a bit. Don't run away. Then come back with a clear head and face the challenges headlong. Nobody can fight your battles for you. You start with God to fight your battles and you end it with yourself. Whatever the challenges are, no challenge. It might take a while, it might take some time, but no challenge is insurmountable. The highest mountains in the world, one of the highest mountains in the world, I think, is Kilimanjaro. But I think I have read and heard about it that people have climbed to that summit. So if people can climb to the top of the highest mountain in the world, you can actually also climb on top of any situation that life throws at you. Mine was an accident. I could have died, but I am here today. I actually got married. I never thought I could. I have two wonderful children. I never thought I would. The day I got married, I was just looking out of the window. Would my husband come? Would he come? Would he come? Or would he run away? Would he disappoint me? Well, he showed up. When we're cutting the cake, when we're doing so many other things, what did you do in engagement ceremonies and all that? I kept looking at the man that, am I dreaming? And I kept pinching myself.
Wow.
I heard, when I was doing my NYIC, I actually heard a conversation about myself. I was climbing up the staircase. Two married couples, and they were saying they felt sorry for me, that who was going to marry me. They didn't know I was coming up the stairs. When they noticed I was there, they stopped talking. I could feel the shame on their faces. I ran into the ladies and I wept my eyes out and I said, God, is this what you have for me? Well, alas, he had something that I never could imagine. When my husband was coming towards me, I told him, sir, I do not believe this is going to go anywhere. Some people have gone. I remember when I was going out with the love of my life that I thought I was going to get married to then. His friends convinced him that what was he doing with somebody like that? That was my tag then. That how can you be seen with somebody like that? Don't you know that she's a dent on your reputation? And he left me. So when my husband came around, I was like, mister, if you're going to leave me too, the door is wide open. Because I didn't believe that he was going to go through with it. A lot of people didn't believe that he was going to go through with it. But I got beauty from the ashes. I got married. And I have two beautiful children today. I had a wonderful career in the bank. The bank took a chance on me. There's so many things that people like with what happened to me go through. Maybe in if I have another chance to be on your show, Sherlyn, I'm going to share issues with inclusion. I've gone for interviews that I know that, well, to be modest, I can say that I did well. But I could see the funny looks that I was given and I was never called back. But did that stop me? The bank gave me a chance and I was there for 13 years. there is no challenge that is insurmountable. As long as you're living, there is always a second chance. And it starts and it ends with you. Do not allow anybody to tell you otherwise. It might look daunting. It might look like you can't do it. But when you sit back and you breathe, it will fall into place and it will make sense eventually. And you can get up and go.
Thank you so very much, Oluwakemi. I'm here listening to you, and I too am inspired, an inspirational speaker to another inspirational speaker. You know, oftentimes I sit and I wonder, who inspire those that inspires? Maybe you can answer, Kiri, who inspire those who are inspired? You know, because some persons think that because we inspire other persons, we don't need inspiration as well.
But, you draw strength from yourself and other people.
Right.
You draw strength from yourself and other people. I know inspirational speakers, they have moments of their own. Just like training the trainer.
Right, training the trainer. Like training you the need training as well.
Exactly. Just sometimes you step back and listen to others and you get referred and you go.
All right, a very powerful story from you, and you made mention if you get the opportunity to share your story again. I mean, once we've made contact, there's no letting go, you know. Once we've made contact, Kimi, there's no letting go. So yes, whenever you're ready, whenever I'm ready, you know, we can make it happen. I want to thank you so very much. Thank you so very much. And those who are listening, my listeners, I hope you have been inspired. I hope you have been motivated. But no, you need to have the discipline in order to ensure that you too achieve what you go for. Without the discipline, it won't happen. So we can be here to talk to you, to give you the stories, to give you the inspiration, to try to motivate you. But if you lack discipline, it will never happen. So be disciplined in order to, you know, realize your dream. Listen to the inspirational stories. Be inspired. Know that you too have a purpose here on earth. And it's not who is placed on earth decide what your purpose is. You are the only persons who decide your purpose. And if you fail yourself, then all else will fail. I want to thank you so very much, Oluwakemi. And all the best. What's next for you? What's next for you? I know it doesn't end here. What's next for you?
Basically, I'm thinking of, I'm working on pulling all my experiences together, both personally and career-wise, into a book. That's what I'm thinking of doing. A book that's, that will be a lasting legacy to encourage others. You know, when you say when something is documented, it is better. Because when you pick it up, you read it, it resonates with you. Unlike when you continue to talk about it, you can actually forget. But when you pick it up and you read it and you read it and you read it all over again, it sticks and you can do something with it. So I'm thinking of, I'm compiling my journey and trying to put it down in a book, and so that others can actually get value. I believe in value. If you do not give others value, you just came to the world. Sorry to say this, you came to the world to waste time. And God did not put anybody on this earth to be a time waster. If you waste time, is one of the resources that God gave us. If you waste time, He will ask you for it.
Awful. Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much for passing through. Thank you so very much for sharing your story. And I want to say all the best to you. I know that it will be possible. And that book is a book I cannot wait to read.